Welcome to Spook Pod. This is Courtney.
And this is Emily.
Okie dokie. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Spook Pod. Hope you're having a good day. How's your day going, Emily?
I mean, it's okay. We had a freak thunderstorm that wasn't a thunderstorm. I mean, it was. There was thunder. It wasn't a storm, though. It was like five booms of thunder and then some sun. So I don't really know what's happening. And hopefully you can't hear the extremely loud voices of the other people in my home right now. Because they've decided to have the loudest phone conversation ever. I can hear it through my headphones. So, like, I can. It's loud. Hoping my mic isn't picking it up.
Well, hopefully they're not saying anything bad that we, in case.
No, it's
hear.
Like it's like my niece, and she's like three, so not even. Just like two and a bit.
Well, apologies if you hear any background noise or thunder we're working with today. And I also wanted to say, I hope you're not at least not hating our new 2-week release schedule of episodes.
Because we're not hating it. It's nice. It's giving us time to actually. Like work on
yeah.
the episodes.
I know. I like have this written down to talk about because, yeah, if you're wondering where all our episodes are lately, we are now releasing them every other Friday instead of every Friday, just to be able to manage our lives better. Like, I really wish that we could do this podcast more. It's fun and I enjoy working on it, but it's it's a lot, especially if you have other things going on, you know?
And it's 100% a passion project, and we don't make any money off of it, and we
no.
just do
In
it
fact,
because we like it.
It costs us money.
Yeah, so we just do it because we like it, and yeah, it's tough to fit that in next to a full-time job.
Exactly. Maybe one day this podcast will grow and it won't be like that, but for now, this is the way it is. So thanks for sticking by us. And yeah, we are finally talking about the Dutch serial killer that
yeah,
I said
we
were going to talk about.
We got teased with it like, what, five episodes ago? And
yeah.
then it just never
like
came.
Weeks ago. So sorry for the delay. But this case is a little bit differently formatted. We haven't done a case like this before where we focus on like the perpetrator first and foremost, right? Normally we start with like a victim and we tell their story and then we talk about the perpetrator and normally make fun of them. But because this guy is like a serial killer and one of the only Dutch serial killers, I think it's interesting to just look at this as a whole. And it's also going to be in two parts. So the second part will come out in 2 weeks.
Also, like, just a general blanket congratulations to the Dutch population, because either you guys are really good at not raising psychos, or you're really good at raising people who don't get caught committing murder. So, I'm not sure where we're sitting on this one, but either way, you've achieved a high level of something.
Yeah, funny. I actually, like, talk about this a tiny bit. So, yeah, Dutch serial killers are not common, which is interesting, especially, like, it's even when you make allowances for population size and stuff, like, the Dutch are not big serial killers, which is awesome. I'm glad I live here. But I was just kind of, like, thinking about it and, like, maybe poking fun a little bit and, like, thinking culturally why this could be. And one of the reasons, I think, is because the Dutch as a culture are very logic-driven, I find, as opposed to, like, emotionally driven. And I think a lot of killers are often impulsive and emotional and don't really have good problem-solving skills. But the Dutch are, like, forward thinkers and really prize that behavior. So I was like,
I love that this description has come out of your mouth. And we can generally say with very high confidence levels that the U.S. probably has the highest rate of serial killers.
Yeah, I think so.
So just, like, take a quick look at yourselves, America. Just a quick look.
Yeah, so I think the Dutch are, like, they're like, well, being a serial killer doesn't sound very logical to me. Like, I'd get my clothes dirty. I'd go to prison. Why would I do that?
It sounds exhausting, quite honestly.
It's like, very exhausting.
Thinking about the steps that people go through when committing one murder and then multiply that by multiple people. And you can see how things start slipping through the cracks and they get caught. Because it's just too much for one person to handle, you know?
Yeah. And another cultural factor that I think... So did you know that the Dutch kids are actually the happiest kids on the planet, according to science or whatever?
That's how we cite things now, according to science or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
But, like... Generally, like, happy, well-adjusted children grow up into happy, well-adjusted adults. So that's, I think, another thing that maybe has a little bit to do with the fact that the Dutch tend to be well-adjusted people. Although the guy we're talking about today was not. Let me mention that. The guy today was not at all a happy or well-adjusted child.
We do not want to promote this man as happy or well-adjusted.
No. And he definitely grew up into someone who had a lot of issues. So we'll dive more into that in a moment. I also just wanted to mention there's two books on this serial killer where a large majority of my research was derived from. Both of the books are in Dutch. One is called The Anatomy of a Serial Killer, A Portrait, and it's by Sietse van der Zee. And the second book is called Het Beest van Harkstede, also by the same author. So this author knew the killer really well and had visited him in jail at least 30 times. He also spoke with, like, acquaintances from the past and psychiatrists and therapists. Like, he was really involved in this guy's life. And Sietse was the former editor-in-chief of Het Parool, which is a famous daily newspaper in the Netherlands. And he was approached by a fishing buddy of the killer asking if he would write a book about him. So he did. And during their first conversation in jail, the author was warned by a guard who said, "Make sure the table stays between you two. The man is a monster. He can strike at any time. Before you can even press the alarm, you'll be dead within 30 seconds." So, yeah, this guy today definitely has some issues.
Just, like, a few. Honestly, though, the skill it takes to just outwardly murder someone in a prison situation where they are, like, visiting you and the guard is, like, he's capable of killing you in 30 seconds, like, to just have that kind of clout, I'm, you know?
Yeah, scary, though. So with that, let me just give a little trigger warning for today's episode. I mean, like, you know, you're an adult and you're listening to a crime podcast, and this episode is about a serial killer of women, so you probably know where we're gonna be going with this episode. But if you don't want to listen to it, here's your opportunity to bow out now, and we will see you later. I do think that this case is just, like, a tiny little bit more graphic than we usually get into. Like, not too much, but there are a couple gross parts, and I'll warn you about them ahead of time, too. Okay, so getting back to this case that we're talking about today, it is a tiny bit linked to the story that we did recently, which was the first time that I mentioned we would be talking about a serial killer, and that was the episode that we did on the murder of Anna de Ruyter de Vilt. So I planned to release this episode right after that episode because they go a little bit hand in hand. But now, because we're late, I'm just going to quickly recap to bring us up to speed. So if you haven't listened, maybe you want to go back and listen to the episode of Anna de Ruyter de Vilt. Then we won't seem late when you then listen to this episode next.
But in case, you know, that doesn't flow with you, we can just do a previously on Spook Pod.
Well, Anne was the one, if you remember, Emily, she is the one on Queen's Day. She went to Amsterdam. She was going to meet friends and sell t-shirts and stay the night. But her day got kind of botched. So she took the train back to Groningen, where she lived. And she was found dead the next day near the train tracks. And eventually it was determined that her killer was a guy named Hank S. And Hank was the shitty dude who, he was only out of jail for like 8 days. And in that 8 days, he murdered Anna and a prostitute named Shirley Herijkers. And then it came out that he also murdered Annette Van Rijn. And and he was also the one who got stabbed in jail, which left him paralyzed, and then he raped a 70-year-old woman while he was in a wheelchair. And then, yeah, he refused all psychological treatment, and he's basically just been wasting away ever since in a facility because he's been deemed untreatable. So yeah, remember that guy?
Yeah, no, vaguely recall him.
So he was a serial killer too. But this serial killer that we're talking about today was active in Groningen at the same time that Hank was on his killing spree as well. So, and this serial killer targeted prostitutes. So because Shirley was a prostitute, for a long time, Shirley was thought to be a victim of this serial killer. And it actually took years for people to realize that it was Hank S. But even still, Hank was acquitted of Shirley's death. So Shirley has never received any justice. Anyways, I just thought it was interesting that, like, Shirley connected these two cases because they didn't know, like, which serial killer had killed her, basically.
And after I just sat here and said, hey, like, good job, Dutch people, for not really, like, having serial killers. And then you have two active in the same city at the same time. Cool your jets.
So the serial killer we are discussing today, his name is Willem van Eyck. He was also referred to as the Beast of Harkstede, or Het Beest van Harkstede. Harkstede is a little town just outside of Groningen, and this is where the guy actually lived. So Willem has 5 deaths fully attributed to him. But let's dive into the story. So Willem van Eyck was born on August 13th, 1941, in Kortenaar in South Holland, which is actually pretty far from Groningen, where a lot of his crimes took place. And at the time, like, when he was born, the area that he lived in was considered a slum, but today it's a lot nicer there. Also, when he was born, the Netherlands was under German occupation. So Willem grew up in, like, a working-class, kind of poor environment with World War II happening, like, right outside his doorstep. And his family, which was pretty typical for the time, had a lot of children. They had 8 children, to be exact. And Willem, he wasn't really good at anything, so he didn't stand out in any way, like, against his siblings, and he really received no attention from anyone growing up. Like, he was probably a really lonely kid, which is sad. His parents didn't give him any special attention, so his father was described as, like, a pretty decent guy, but really dominant and strict with his children. And his mother, on the other hand, was apparently really withdrawn and cold. So they didn't really show him any love, and he didn't fit in with his other siblings. They didn't really like him. And at school, he was an outsider and a loner.
So, like, basically everyone knew from the start to just, like, not be around this creepy little kid.
Yeah. He was also really bad at school in general, so he, like, hated going there. Like, this poor kid, he just had nothing going for him.
This makes me think of, like, a Cinderella story where she's like, you're not very pretty and you're not very smart.
Yeah, that's the definition of Willem. So because he didn't enjoy school, like, he refused to learn, he didn't do any work. Instead, he preferred to collect strange objects, such as dead insects and desiccated frogs.
Right there. Right there. Everyone in the world, right there.
That's a red flag.
That's the red flag. Stop right there.
That's a sign.
Put that kid in a hole and you don't let him out.
In the village, he was known for his cruelty toward animals. So
flag number two. Hey, ooh, what's that?
Yeah. Tiny trigger warning for animal abuse. He took pleasure in tormenting dogs, drowning cats, and kicking ducks to death. So, like, I think in a way for him, like, lashing out and doing these extreme behaviors, it was one of the only ways that he got attention, which is probably why he kept doing shit like this over and over again. And he became a really unmanageable child. When he was just 8 years old, his brothers characterized him as evil personified, And at school, they called him Heka Vilempi, which means, like, Crazy William. This nickname he was given, he later used to explain some of his terrible behavior. So ultimately, school's really unsuccessful for him. He doesn't have any friends. He also, like, at school, he never learned how to read or write. Like, he was mostly illiterate. I think he could write a little bit. And by the time he was 14 years old, he had given up on school altogether.
I mean, this right here is kind of like a really interesting look at, like, nature versus nurture, because the fact that he had 7 siblings and even they were like, that kid's fucked up. That kind of shows you that, like, no matter what his parents had done, I don't think it would have changed much for our little psychopath here.
Yeah, there's definitely just, like, bad seeds. And I'm going to talk about that a tiny bit now, actually, because, like, years later, psychiatrists would look at him and be like, what the hell went wrong with him? And there were a couple things that stood out, although it doesn't, like, it can't fully be proven. But one thing was that Willem had a really complicated birth where he was without oxygen for a significant period of time. And it was thought that maybe he had some brain damage because of that. And he also suffered a concussion at the age of 10. And from there on, he had really severe headaches regularly. So it's thought that, yeah, he has some, like, brain issues going on. So maybe this, plus a lack of any real close relationships in life, just led him down a bad path. And we know that, yeah, like, animal abuse is one of the arms of the serial killer trifecta. And, like, if you harm animals when you're young, it often leads to worse harmful behavior as you get older, like, you escalate. And Willem was already committing a lot of crimes at a young age. So first, he would steal from his parents and siblings. And then when he reached the age of 12, he began breaking into his neighbors' houses and stealing from them. And as I already said, at the age of 14, he quit school. And from there, he would flow through, like, casual job after casual job with periods of unemployment in between them.
Can you imagine just, like, living in a neighborhood and all of a sudden your neighbor's shitty youngest child breaks into your home and starts stealing your shit and they're only, like, 12? Like, what do you do in that situation? Like, I'd hit them, for sure. I'm not afraid to hit a child, and I'd be like, get out of my home.
Can't say that, Emily. You're not afraid to hit a child.
I don't have children. You don't need to call CAS on me. It's all good. But here's the deal. 12-year-olds know what they're doing. So if there's some shitty little 12-year-old from my neighborhood that's broken into my house and is stealing my shit, he's getting whacked up the back of the head and sent out my door. Get out of, like, here.
Get out of my house. Why are you what are you here? Doing? So people who worked with Willem described him as having a really hot temper and temper tantrums, and that he was destructive and violent. He even tried to join the military at one point, but they rejected him for psychological reasons.
Strange, because he seems so level.
And eventually he would always fall back into, like, a life of theft. That was how he lived and survived. His criminal record officially began in 1964 when he was caught stealing batteries, tools, and a grease gun.
And what a shitty thing to get caught stealing. Seriously, steal the good stuff so that when it goes on your record, it can be really impressive. Like, stole a horse.
Stole the Mona Lisa.
Stole a car. Stole someone's shed. You steal a shed? That's impressive. How did you get it out of the yard?
Like the guys who stole Pam and Tommy's safe. Have you been watching, like, the Pam and Tommy show?
I have not. No.
I like it.
But I will say it's actually fairly common. This is going to sound so stupid. It's actually fairly common in my neck of the woods for people to fully rip ATMs out of the sides of buildings and, like, steal the entire ATM. And that just feels like, you know, accurate for...
Not a grease gun like Willem.
Yeah, stupid batteries. Oh, I got a couple of AAA batteries. Look at me go. Ooh. No, they get a full ATM. Like... I don't care what it actually was. In my head, he stole a pack of Energizer batteries In 1964, when that probably didn't even exist, he was walking out of their home with a wrench, a 4-pack of triple A's, and a grease gun, and he got caught.
And so, unsurprisingly, Willem didn't do well with the ladies either. The girls in his village thought he was really creepy and gross. He did manage to have one girlfriend in 1966 when he was 25 years old, but it only lasted a few months. And when she broke things off with him, this, like, spiraled him into, like, more bad acts and a second conviction for burglary and theft.
This time it was a pack of gum and some shoelaces.
Expensive ones, because he spent 8 months in prison for this.
Okay, so don't actually, like, tell people it was a pack of gum and shoelaces, because that was a joke in case anyone missed it.
I think everyone knows you're joking constantly. And not long after that prison stint, he did another one, also for stealing, and that one was about 7 months. So he's getting himself in, like, that crime cycle pretty deep, where he's, like, in and out of jail all throughout his life, basically. And so it was around this time when he had this first stint of prison experiences that he underwent his first psychiatric examination, which was mandated by the courts because he was just getting into trouble all the time. And can I say, I think that that's actually pretty cool, just because, like, this is, we're talking, like, the late 60s and the courts are already mandating psychiatric help. Like, I kind of thought that this was, like,
leaps and bounds ahead of North American prison systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really realize that this went back so far in time. So I thought that was interesting.
Because pretty much in Canada and the US, if you commit a crime, we're just like, wow, you're shitty. And then we put you in a little box and that's it. Nothing else.
But clearly, like, this, it didn't help Willem at all. So the psychiatrist established that Willem quickly became irritated at people and would then act aggressively, if not outright explosively, toward them. He couldn't tolerate any frustrations, and in addition, he showed gross gaps in the intellectual area, which in turn could be a result, again, from abnormalities in his brain. The psychiatrist's overall conclusion was that the prospects for Willem were not very favorable.
I wonder if he heard that, like if that was communicated to him, like they did this examination and then they just, like, kind of came into his cell and were like, listen, your prospects, not favorable, man.
We, like, do not have high hopes for you.
Yeah, you're going to be shitty at the rest of everything you ever do. And for someone who hasn't been good at stuff their whole life to, like, hear that and have, like, that confirmation.
Yeah, it can kind of become, like, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah,
right?
You told, like, him he was going to be shitty. He's going to go be shit. Like, if they had come in and been like, you are off the charts intelligent. We don't know how you slip through the cracks of society. Like, stroke that ego and then see what, if it's the same. This is an experiment that Emily has proposed. Stroke the serial killer's ego and see if they don't become a serial killer. You have to know. So we have to be able to time travel for this to work, I think.
But there was also something else that was really disturbing that came to light in these psychiatric sessions. So Willem spoke about, like, these nightmares and disturbing fantasies that he had. He said they started when he was about 21 or 22. And at first, it wasn't really nightmares, but more like dreams, even really nice ones at first. But over time, they became more and more violent. And he dreamed of cutting people, specifically women who lived in his village. He said, quote, I want to destroy a woman, but I don't think destroy is the right word. A better word is mutilate or cut open.
It's pretty descriptive for an illiterate human.
So, like, he wasn't into guns or anything. Like, it was physically cutting that was his thing. And this feeling got worse and worse until by the time he was about 27, he was walking around with these fantasies, like, 24 hours a day. Like, he was completely obsessed by these thoughts. And then, on Monday, June 21st, 1971, a girl was found naked and dead in a ditch. She was found by a town worker who was mowing the lawn, and her clothes were laid in a heap beside her. She was found near the town of Uithoorn, which is south of Amsterdam. So Willem hadn't yet made his way over to the Groningen area by this point, by the way.
Hadn't wandered that far.
It took about 10 hours for the police to figure out this girl's identity, which was actually done through, like, a repair mark engraved on her watch. And it turned out to be a girl named Cora Mantle. She was 15 years old. So Cora had spent June 20th with her boyfriend in Amsterdam, but lost track of time and ended up missing the last train home to Uithoorn. So she decided to hitchhike. And that was the last anybody had heard from her until she was found dead the next day. During her autopsy, a little bit of graphic here, it was determined that Cora had been strangled with a rope or cord and then raped both vaginally and anally. Cora's father put out a reward of 10,000 guilders, and the public prosecutor added 5,000 guilders to that. But despite that, police could not figure out who did this. They looked at countless suspects, but couldn't find the right one. And actually, one guy was a suspect for a really long time. It was a man who owned a jewelry store. Like, apparently Cora was supposed to start work there, and people found this guy really suspicious for some reason. So he was under suspicion for a long time. But it wasn't him, and I think I know who did it.
Oh, just a hunch.
So there's a quote from an officer at this time saying, "I could be wrong, of course, but I don't think we're dealing with a psychopath here." And another officer said, quote, I do not have the impression that he set out to kill. So it was really thought that this was just like a random crime of passion, that there was like, the motive was like a sexual assault, and Cora ended up dying during that. It was kind of unfathomable at this time that someone would specifically just want to kill another person. And it would actually take about 3 years for Cora's crime to get solved. So before we talk more about that, let's continue with Willem.
I just think it's really interesting because, again, we've been talking about like how few serial killers like that actually exist in Dutch society. It's kind of interesting then to see, like, when you watch like American crime shows or whatever, it's like you find one body, you find another body a couple weeks later, and immediately someone's like, maybe it's a serial killer. But like these guys are like, no, I don't think it could be. Like, I just feel like in American society, it is such a thing to just immediately jump to serial killer because they're so prevalent in society. It's just like a knee-jerk reaction. Well, this guy did something weird. I guess it's a serial killer. like we have like Criminal Minds shows and stuff, yeah, where they like profile it and all this stuff. And like literally in Dutch society, it's such a foreign concept to them that it's like their last thought is that it's going to be a serial killer.
Yeah. And especially in like the early 70s. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like serial killers like really kind
of
they really ramped up in the
70s to the 90s, you know? Yeah. There was like a,
I feel like that was like their prime time.
Yeah. I feel like science was at a point where it hadn't extended so far that it made it like super hard to be a serial killer, but also like it was easier to catch people. Like, I think you probably had serial killers back in the 30s, the 40s, like,
oh,
earlier,
for sure. Yeah.
That you just couldn't catch because there was no science there. And then I think you got to the 90s and it was like, okay, we've got the science now to catch them.
Like,
but
we
there
can
was...
tell it's the same person doing it.
Yeah, but there was still, like, that window of opportunity, too, where, like, as much as the science was there, it was slow-moving science. And I think now we've gotten to a point in society where, like, yeah, you might get people who are serial killers, but they don't get as far into serial killing because, like, you really can track and catch them so much faster now than we were able to before.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. So after the murder of Cora, Willem was still experiencing these fantasies and nightmares, and he regularly went out on the prowl, like, looking for anyone, like lone bikers, lone walkers, or hitchhikers late in the night.
Literally all I'm learning from this is don't miss your train.
I feel like that's like a theme in a lot of stories that we cover.
Listen, it's like... because the Dutch people, and no shade because I think it's great, but the Dutch people have a real big thing for biking, and that doesn't happen so much in American society. Like, truly, if I got off of a train and had to still, like, go 10 minutes to my home, I would be calling a cab or an Uber and getting into that instead of walking my butt home or biking my butt home. And I feel like, again, that's such a, like, cultural thing where, like, that's not the first option when you get off of your train in the middle of the Dutch countryside. You're like, I will take this handy dandy bike that I left here 3 days ago that no one has stolen, and I will hop on it and I will pedal my ass home.
Yeah.
And I will be safe and everyone will be happy.
Yeah. And in North America, like, we don't have good public transportation at all. It's like cars. That's how you get
They do
around.
Have those bikes that you can rent in Toronto now, but I feel like a lot of them have been vandalized and broken. Because it's Toronto, so...
Canada's also, like, so much more spaced out. Like, the Netherlands is a really small country, so going from place to place by bike is easier. Like, in Canada, if I was to bike to high school, it would take me, like, 3 hours, probably.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my bike from my... And my town is not large, but I'm pretty sure a bike ride from my house to where I went to high school would have probably been at least 30 to 40 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would have been sweaty because I would have been going fast.
Yeah. And we don't like doing that in North America. We're like, no.
I'd rather not sweat.
I'm going to be lazy and drive.
Yeah. Isn't there a bus that takes me?
So at the start of 1974, Willem moved into a houseboat. He was still living, like, in the south of Holland in a small town. And apparently this houseboat was white, but in dripping red paint, he painted the freedom on it, but in Dutch. Like, the freedom. Not freedom, the freedom. And I was like...
It's like when my mom calls Facebook the Facebook.
Doesn't she know that they dropped the? My God.
No, it's been years.
So not long after Willem moved into that houseboat, on Monday, August 19th, 1974, the police found the body of a 44-year-old nurse named Altje van der Plaat at 8:30 in the morning. But the murder probably was committed the night before, Sunday evening around 8:15. Altje had been on her way home from church going to her sister's house. Again, the same thing as with Cora, the police suspected that Altje had been the victim of a crime of passion or opportunity, with the motive just being a sexual desire. Now, we're going to get a little bit graphic here, because Altje was, like, absolutely mutilated. Her stomach was fully ripped open. She had stab wounds all over her chest, especially to her left breast, and her left nipple was completely cut off. And she also had numerous deep cuts to her throat. I saw some sources that said that her entire left breast was cut off, but the majority of them just said nipple, so that's what I'm going with. It was a little hard to confirm. And Altje was lying naked on her back in a cornfield when she was found behind a 2-meter-high pile of manure. At her autopsy, the pathologist counted 27 stab and laceration wounds in total, 16 of which were in her left breast, and 3 of them had pierced her heart and 2 had pierced her aorta.
Okay, so here's another question that I have. And it might just be because of the time that it was in the world, but he's already a criminal. And they've already done this, like, psychological review on him, and he's already told them that he has these deep, dark fantasies of mutilating people. Do they not track where the criminals then go to live? And if that is the case, when the criminal moves into a new place and then all of a sudden you have a dead body pop up that's mutilated in the exact way that the criminal has described wanting to mutilate people, are you then not catching some more red flags from Willem?
So actually, he was caught right after this. 6 witnesses came forward and said that they had seen Willem riding his moped around that area that night. So police went to his houseboat.
Oh, he had a moped. That's almost worse than living on a houseboat is having a moped. Willem.
They're very
Is it because he didn't have is it because he didn't have a driver's license because he's shitty and doesn't know how to read or write?
Maybe. But yeah, so like he's pretty familiar with police. Like he has a lengthy criminal record at this time. Apparently he also had a record for sexually assaulting underage girls as well, although I couldn't find anything more on that. But he was arrested right after this murder took place. And 2 days later, he confessed to Ulcha's murder. He said that on the evening of August 18th, he saw Ulcha walking on the road alone, and the thought occurred to him, quote, to do something with her. He went to his houseboat, which was really close by, and he got a knife. Then he drove up to Ulcha from behind on his moped, showed her the knife, and said, you have to come with me. She went with him to the cornfield where she was found, and he ordered her to undress and lay down on the ground. She then began to fight and scream, and then Willem said he panicked and stabbed her. He said he stabbed her about 15, 16 times, but that was a bit off.
Yeah, he was like a little short on the stabbing.
A little bit more that you did there. Right after giving his confession about Ulcha, he shocked everyone by also confessing to the murder of Cora.
And isn't this like years later at this point too? When was this, Cora?
This is in, Cora was in 1971 and Ulcha was in 1974.
So yeah, it is. Okay. It is like 3 years later. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Three years later. He said that on the night of Cora's murder, he had been at a cafe and then he went to the cinema after that to watch a movie. And then when he was driving home, he saw Cora hitchhiking. And so, yeah, this has been his fantasy for a long time. He wanted to pick up a girl hitchhiking or something like that and murder her. So, and he had even driven around the area where he picked up Cora, like specifically looking for that. So when he saw Cora, he thought this was his opportunity. He said, quote, I finally had the chance and I took it. He said he already knew he was going to kill her when he saw her there. So he picked her up and began driving toward Outhorn, where she said she needed to go. And at some point, he took a turn that was like the opposite way that she told him to go. And then he stopped the car and said to her, now we're going to say goodbye to each other in a nice way. Cora refused and tried to get out of the car. But from here, Willem said he strangled her with her own scarf. And then drove to the ditch, undressed her, and tossed her in. He actually denied raping her, but it was very clear that he did that. He also said he regretted doing this because she was so young, and he didn't know how young she was. Apparently she looked a lot older than 15, which she was.
So what, you have to ID people before you murder them, Willem?
Right.
Maybe just don't fucking murder Willem. People. As a solution, just don't murder people.
So in 1975, Willem went to trial in The Hague for these two murders and was eventually convicted of manslaughter, not murder.
How?
I know. I feel like in Europe, like, manslaughter is like just like what they choose often. Like, it's always like, oh, he was convicted of manslaughter.
I feel like the and definition like, must be different because like yeah. Right now in North America, manslaughter and usually involuntary manslaughter is when you are the cause of someone's death without the intent of like murdering that person.
Yeah.
But if you kill someone, it's murder most of the time. We have degrees of maybe they don't have. Do they have the degrees of murder? Like, because we have first, second, third.
I haven't seen it really. Yeah, like we have first degree murder, which is like I thought about it and I killed them, which is what this is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have second degree murder, which is like
I didn't think about it, but I killed them.
Yeah, like I got really mad at them, and in the moment, like when I was beating them up, they died. And then manslaughter is like. Yeah, just kind of like a lesser one that is used for like if you hit somebody with your car.
Yeah, that's involuntary, like right? That.
Yeah.
Like you didn't mean to, but you caused the death of another human being.
Yeah. But I don't fully know. Like I've only seen murder and manslaughter when we look at these cases in the Netherlands. But yeah, it's just interesting to me because a lot of the times people just get convicted of manslaughter. So the details of the crimes read during the court hearing were so disgusting that some of the prosecutors vomited in court. And at first, Willem was sentenced to 20 years in prison, followed by mandatory psychiatric treatment at a treatment facility. And he had to serve, like, the entirety of that sentence, like, the full 20 years. Prosecutors said that if he had not been arrested, he would have committed more murders because it was in his nature. They described him as highly insane, with no emotion or remorse for his crimes. Willem appealed his sentence, and the appeals court of The Hague heard his case. So at this trial, a doctor argued against his sentence from a medical psychiatric point of view, saying that such a long prison sentence stood in the way of his treatment. He argued that Willem was indeed treatable, and that he saw the prospect of a full recovery, and that intensive therapy would take about 5 or 6 years. So on June 26th, 1975, the Court of Appeals reduced his sentence from 20 years down to 18 years.
I hope that doctor feels like a shitty human being and felt like a shitty human being for the rest of his life.
I hope so too. And I mean, like, his sentence wasn't reduced by much, but I think, like, I don't know, like, when it comes to, like, Dutch sentences, it seems that people don't ever serve the full amount. But we will see what happens. So
also, just a quick little side note. I did Google it. The difference between manslaughter and murder. And they said that manslaughter, it's just in general. So I'm assuming this is, like, a blanket definition of manslaughter is if you intend to harm but then accidentally kill a person. It's known as manslaughter.
Okay.
So if the intention at the beginning of, like, the assault or whatever was not murder, but you did intend to, like, commit harm to a person, then it's manslaughter.
Okay.
Which is probably what they did here, but I don't like it. You still killed somebody.
Well, yeah, and, like, I don't think that's true at all. Like, Willem said that he
wanted to end them. Kill. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he killed them. So, like, how is that? Like, that's murder.
You did it. You thought about it, then you did it. This is murder.
Yeah. So in 1980, I guess Willem was, like, a little bit lonely in jail, and he put out a personal ad in a newspaper saying, "Young man, 38 years old, seeks to meet a woman, children, no problem."
Punctuation is very important in that sentence. Because I feel like, without the, like, definite breaks in the sentences, it could have been like, 38-year-old seeks to meet a woman. Children are no problem. So, like, he's just, like, age doesn't matter. Like, you could be a child.
Oh. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're, like, you know.
I want, like, a woman, you know, 10 to 48. Doesn't matter. Come on in.
So a divorced woman named Audrey, who had 5 children, responded to the ad, and the two became pen pals. And during his time in prison, so Willem was sent every now and then to a treatment center in Groningen called the Van Mestag Clinic, and this is where he had his psychiatric care. So on one of these trips to the treatment center, he asked if he could meet Audrey, and the treatment center allowed it. And Audrey was really hesitant at first, but she agreed, and she came to meet Willem. At the end of their first meeting, Willem told Audrey that he was in prison for something very serious. He told her it was for the murder of 2 women. And Audrey was apparently terrified, but that didn't stop her from marrying Willem in 1982 while he was still in prison. And she kept the real reason why Willem was in prison, like, a secret from her children and her family.
If you can't tell your family why the guy you're dating is in jail, don't date that.
That's a
guy.
Red flag. There's so many red flags.
Willem is giving out red flags all over the place, and people are choosing to ignore them. At this point, it's survival of the fittest, because he has done his due diligence as a serial killer to let us know what he was doing, and everyone was just like, it's fine. He's fine. He like literally sat there and was like, yo, I think about killing people to the point that it is like distracting me from being able to live a normal life. And everyone was like, he's okay.
He's okay. He's good. Go on, Willow.
He's fine. He told us about it. He did.
He told them about it. He confessed to the murders. And then he told Audrey about it, too.
And she was like,
everyone's like, okay.
And she was like, let's bang. I have five kids. I need some more, especially ones with psychopathic tendencies. Let's give her. Also, it's not like she married him for money, because he comes from a family of eight children, so you know he doesn't have any family money, and he's been living most of his life in a prison cell. So why?
Why? That is a great question. Yeah, and even, like, the staff, like, before they got married, the staff at the treatment facility was, like, telling her to stay away from him, and she didn't. She visited him regularly, and she even, like, cleaned his cell at the treatment facility, like...
Do you know those people when they're, like, in a terrible relationship and you're like, leave him, he's garbage? My fire alarm is going off right now.
I can hear it.
We're going to wait that out. That's good. Okay, it's done now. Yeah, so she's like one of those girls where you're telling them their boyfriend, like, he's trash, leave him. And she's like, no, you're just getting in the way of our love. We love each other. No, he doesn't love anything. And you're crazy.
Yeah, I don't know who would, like, subject themselves to that. Like, that would be scary, too. Like, what if he freaked out on you one day? But the author of the
book... He's already murdered two other women, and you're like, we're good. He's good.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Exactly.
He's fine.
Like, you know what he's capable of. But yeah, the author of the book, he thinks that Audrey suffers from, like, the Florence Nightingale syndrome. You know, so this is, this almost exclusively occurs in women, usually ones who have been, like, a victim of, like, chronic neglect or sexual abuse when they were younger or something like that, and they think that they can heal people, like, with their love, and it's to compensate for what they themselves lacked as a child. So that's what we think is going on with Audrey.
And that's not necessarily, like, a horrible thing to have in life. But don't use it on a self-proclaimed serial killer.
No, you know? And I think that that's where it normally...
Yeah, those are the ones. Those are the ones that they latch onto.
Yeah, they pick the broken people, right?
It's not just like the sad boy on the corner who's like, I could really use a girlfriend. It's like the guy who's like, I just killed three women and I'm going to make you the next. And she's like, yeah, I can fix you. Nope.
So they had a really romantic wedding, though. Willem was actually being kept in isolation, so he was allowed out to get married, and then he went straight back in to isolation. So, sounds like a really fun time for Audrey.
It just makes me think of Arrested Development when they let George out for, like, the painting.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think he got, like, out of jail. He just got let out of, like,
out of
isolation cell, and then, like, yeah. So let's fast forward about 13 years. My source just said, like, in the late 1980s, so I'm not sure the exact date, but Willem was out of prison and sent to the Van Mestach Clinic full-time in Groningen. So this is, like, his full mandatory psychiatric care.
Full-time job.
Yeah. He's in there. He's in a cell. That's where he lives. He can't leave. And while in this psychiatric facility full-time, he apparently resisted all treatment and was one of the most difficult patients that they ever had. And because of this, he was kept in seclusion most of the time. Psychiatric reports from this whole time stated that Willem had severe childhood trauma as a result of mostly female bullying and being rejected by women.
'Cause you're creepy.
Psychologists also speculated that his deviant behavior was, again, the result of brain damage. He was portrayed by doctors as a pure psychopath. They said also that he could take no accountability for anything. So every action that he took was always someone else's fault. Like, he blamed his parents, his siblings, his classmates for calling him Crazy Willem. He blamed women and doctors and prosecutors and literally, like, everyone except himself. He even referred to all the doctors and psychiatrists as toddlers. So that's at least, like, how it translated. I don't know, like, maybe that's a slur in Dutch or something, but basically, like, he's calling them useless children. He said, quote, "Those people have made me even more dangerous in the 15 years that I have been imprisoned." So it sounds like things are going well.
Again, he's telling us, and everyone's just like, he's fine. Still, they're like, he's fine. He's not fine. Put that man back in jail, leave him in his little cell, and just let things take their course.
Yeah. Although I am still impressed that, like, okay, well, now we're in, like, the late 80s, but the Netherlands, like, has this, like, full psychiatric treatment for patients coming out of jail. And I mean, I can't imagine that the care was super great in the 80s, and we know it did not work for Willem. Like, psychiatrists kind of had a different way of thinking back in this time when psychology was still in, like, its infancy in the 80s, and they really thought that, like, with the right probing conversations that people could change. And I think today, like, I mean, we know that people are still the product of their environment and upbringing and stuff, but I think we realize a bit deeper that at a certain point, like, people get into these fixed patterns, and when you're an adult, those are very hard to break.
I also feel like for most psychiatrists and anyone else who's dealing with patients who have been through trauma, there comes a point where either the person is responding and positively changing their life and healing from the trauma, or they've just locked themselves down and are not changing anything. And you can tell who the ones are that are actually... So, like, I think there are some people in this world who can cope with their trauma and heal from it. And I hope that that's the case for so many people that do go through terrible things. But I also think that there are some people who maybe do not have the capacity to heal from that trauma. And we need to, like, red flag those people.
Yeah. And like, it comes down to, like, you have to want to change, right? Like, if people don't want to change, and clearly Willem, like, was not putting any effort into this. Like, clearly you can tell he's not making progress. Yeah, but for some reason, even though, like, things are not going well with his treatment, he did have a pretty stable relationship with Adri. And through this, he kind of built up the appearance that he could function normally in society because he had this, like, stable relationship. But some people also speculate that maybe he was using Adri to make it look like he was on, like, the straight and narrow, but... like, in order to get his treatment ended, right? So in 1988, court was back in session to determine whether his psychiatric care should continue for another 2 years.
We weren't even born yet. I was about to be born. You were, like, pretty far down the line still.
Yeah. A psychiatrist testified that they had made little action with Willem, and that they needed deeper insight into him still to see if he had made progress or if he was still a risk to society and whatnot. The psychiatrist said that, like, yes, his wife was a moderating influence on him, but that he relied too heavily on the relationship and that if it ever broke down, Willem and the public would be in trouble again. And at this point, the courts did agree to extend the term for another 2 years. At this point in time, it also came out that, like, to Audrey's family, the real reason why Willem was in jail.
Yeah, because how can you keep that a secret for so long? Eventually, yeah. Someone's going to be like, hey, remember how your husband murdered a bunch of women?
Like, newspapers exist. News stories exist. And this probably came
out. At this point, I think even the internet is starting to exist.
Yeah. So the majority of her children and family cut off all contact with her at this point. So after 2 years, he was back in court in 1990. And this time, it was the same story, basically, from the psychiatrists. They didn't make a lot of progress with him. But his attorney was saying that he should be released. And he was. He was given permission to go live with his wife as a free man. He didn't even have to, like, check in with a probation officer or anything like that.
I hate that so much.
I know. I feel like hopefully this case like changed this. But yeah, the court documents stated that his risk of reoffending had been reduced to an acceptable minimum. Like, okay.
No, the acceptable minimum is none.
Yeah.
None reoffending. Don't do it.
So this was officially like 15 years after he had been sentenced in 1975. He was a completely free man. So he went and he lived with Audrey. They moved to the village of Harkstede near Groningen into a little farmhouse. Apparently one of Audrey's children lived with them as well. They also had chickens, rabbits, and a pot-bellied pig. Audrey worked at a vet office, and they pretended to have a happy little normal quaint life. How cute.
No.
But things were about to get much, much worse. So they moved to the village of Harkstede, and there is a reason that Willem is called the Beast of Harkstede. It was the events that happened here that gave him his nickname. And that's where I'm going to leave it for part one.
See, this is why I have the biggest issues that I have with the Dutch rehabilitation situation. This guy.
I have to think that, like, it's different now that, like, if they're getting such clear signs from a psychiatrist saying, like, they're not ready to go out in society. And he didn't even, like, do his full sentence, right? He got sentenced to 18 years. So he was out in 15. And he clearly wasn't ready.
And he told us so many times.
He told us, he showed us. For some reason, people are still giving him the time of day.
He's fine. Like, no.
He's literally called the Beast of Harkstede, and he hasn't even been there yet. So, yeah. So we are going to continue this story next time in 2 weeks, and we hope you come back to hear the rest.
Yeah, thanks for coming this time, you know?
Yeah, well, see you later. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes of Spook Pod. New ones are out every other Friday. Available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to chat? Email us at thespookpod@gmail.com or follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit at SpookPod.
For a full list of episodes, more deets, or to see what's coming next, visit our website, spookpod.com.
This has been a presentation of Mostly Awkward Media.
See you next time.